Good morning. You guys doing all right? If it looks like I'm sweating, it's because I am. It looks like my face is red, it's because it is. It looks like I'll be limping around the stage, it's because I am actually limping around the stage. When Jonathan asked me to prepare a message for today, I was excited. I was super pumped, but my calendar is pretty full throughout the year, especially on the weekends. I play slow pitch softball. Any softball fans out there? 70 of you guys? Awesome. Nice. It's a ladies sport, actually. But what men did, they decided when they couldn't play baseball anymore, they're going to go slow pitch style. So it's coming in at 8 miles an hour, underhanded. And I was in a tournament last night in Mount Juliet, Tennessee. You guys familiar with the Nashville area? Other side of Nashville is Mount Juliet. Well, Jonathan calls me last night about 9 o'clock and says, Eddie, how you doing? I said, I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Hold on 1 second. He said, where are you? I said, I'm in Mount Juliet. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm still playing softball. You're still playing softball? Yeah. You're going to be tired, bro. You're going to be tired. You're going to be out of it. So I was like, I'll be all right. I'm not all right. I'm just being honest with you guys. I'm not all right. I'm sore and I'm tired, but I think God's got something to tell us today. I think God's going to speak loudly today. Raise your hand if you're a big fan of history. History fans. 11. Nice. We're just progressively getting greater. Good. I went to the University of Memphis at the beginning of this decade, and I got a degree in history. I started off as a pre-med major, but that just wasn't my thing. I didn't want to study all the time. I like to work. I like to hang out with my now wife, Ashley, and it just wasn't my deal. So I switched over to history because I liked history. I'm good with dates, and quite frankly, it was just easy. So I switched over to history, got a degree in history, knowing full well that I was probably going to be doing something like this or doing the family ministry thing later on in life. So I needed a kind of a means to an end. I wanted to go to graduate school. I wanted to go to seminary. So I decided, let me get my degree in something that's easy / I love, and let's just go for it. So I did that. Well, with me in history, I like dates. I like stats. You guys like going to museums? Anybody? Museums? You're down to 6. Awesome. 7, 6. Okay. Love going to museums. Been to the Pink Palace this year twice. I've gone to, you know, different sports memorabilia places. I had an opportunity last fall to go to a restaurant in St. Louis. And the restaurant is owned by Albert Pujols. We got any Cardinals fans in the house? I'm not even going to give the number of fans anymore. This is just getting sad. But Albert Pujols is a baseball player. He's a professional baseball player. And he's played for many, many years throughout the 2000-2009 season. He grew up, Albert did, in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. And Albert, the reason why I'm talking about Albert is because I get to go to his restaurant last fall, and I get to eat a meal there. And to give you a little bit more about Albert, Albert decided when he was 15, 16 years old to move with his grandmother to New York City. They went from New York City to Independence, Missouri. Yes, that Independence, Missouri. He played for Fort Osage High School and hit .500 his senior year. For those that don't know, that's incredible. That's insane. Like, that's the kind of batting average that you don't even think about. Nobody thinks about hitting .500. That's every two at-bats, he would get a hit. It's crazy, especially in baseball. In softball, it's coming at 8 miles an hour. So if you're hitting .500, you're doing all right. If you hit .700, you're doing good. But like I said, that's eight miles an hour versus 95 miles an hour. So anyway, so Albert, you know, he's going through his career in college, and he signs out of a very small junior college in Missouri, and he gets picked in like the 42nd round. No, I'm sorry, he was a 402nd pick of the 16th round. Goes late in the draft, and he was like all college. He won like state championship honors and stuff like that, and he was really good. But the pros didn't like him because he was big. This dude's 6'3", 230 pounds. This dude is much bigger than I am. Much, much bigger than I am. He's 6'3", 230, and he can rip the baseball all over the field. But he was slow. They didn't know where to put him. So they put him at third, put him in the outfield, didn't understand where they're going to put him. When he gets to the majors and he gets into his rookie season, he hits 37 home runs as a rookie. For those of you who don't know, that's a lot. That's an insane amount of home runs. That's a ridiculous amount of home runs. He averaged his first 9 seasons in the majors, 30-plus home runs. Y'all ready? 100-plus RBIs, and a .300 batting average. Like I said, for those that don't know what I'm talking about, that's incredibly good. Like, that's really, really, really good. As a matter of fact, there's nobody in history that's ever done that before. Started their career, 9 seasons, 30 home runs, 300 batting average, 100 plus RBIs. Nobody has done this ever. Ever. So Pujols is in a class by himself. So I get to go to his restaurant in St. Louis, and I'm a huge Cardinals fan. Ever since I was little, about every year, we at least go to some games. Went with my family for years, go with another group of guys, about 20 of us, we go every year. And when I walked in the restaurant, I was blown away. I couldn't believe it. When I walked in, I saw his MVP trophies. He's won three of them. He's finished in the top nine his entire career. He's been the top 10 best player on the field in his division his entire career. I'm telling you, this guy's excellence is way up here. You guys, I played in a state tournament last night, a state softball tournament, and it's 8 miles an hour. We came in second. It was awesome. I was so pumped. Some of my guys, we made the all-state team, and I was like, woohoo, it's 8 miles an hour, underhanded. Who else is hitting a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, change-ups that come in at 65, curveballs that are falling off the table? I mean, it was insane how his average is staying so high, how his home runs are staying so high, how his RBIs are staying so high. The reason why, in my opinion, he's the best to ever play the game. This guy in 9 years is already the best to ever play the game. So as I'm going through the restaurant, I'm looking at his MVP trophies. I'm looking at his gold glove. I'm looking at his Silver Slugger Awards. I'm looking at his Rookie of the Year trophy, his cleats, his batting gloves, autographs with other celebrities. I mean, I'm in the midst of Albert Pujols' world, and I'm looking around. I'm like, wow, it's unbelievable. When I began to think about it, as I was walking around the restaurant, I was like, man, I'm getting a great sense of Albert. I mean, I'm feeling Albert right now. I mean, what if I got Albert's jersey on? And what if I went to the park and could I play like Albert? If I put his cleats on, would my thighs grow to just an astronomical size where I could hit a ball 400 feet? I mean, what if? And then I thought, no, that's absolutely crazy. What we began to wonder is we got pushed into a room because there's 20 of us, and they don't want us, you know, all mingling outside. We got pushed back into a room, and I'm looking on this wall, and I'm seeing these stats, and it's just all these statistics, just the life's work, basically, of Albert Pujols, just what he has actually done in his career. I mean, it goes through his at-bats, his walks, his hits, his runs. For those that aren't baseball fans, just bear with me. We're going to get off his subject in just a second. His strikeouts, I mean, everything that had to do with his career was on that wall, and it was excellent. He has never had anything less than an excellent season. He barely has slumps in a regular season. I mean, Albert Pujols is the best player I've ever seen. And what's amazing is when I began to look around the restaurant, I saw all this stuff. I was getting a sense of more of Albert than just the stuff. I wasn't really excited as much about the awards and the rewards and who he was, and what he'd done. I was more excited about who he is. This guy's incredible. This guy's great. This guy's more than great. This guy's worth your 10 minutes of my time I've spent talking about him. This guy is this valuable. And I began to think, okay, so if Albert's so great, and we make such a big deal about people and their stuff, you know, why as a culture, it seems, do we do that? Why do we puff ourselves? Why do we make a big deal of ourselves? Anybody catch the ESPYs this past week? It's been on 31 times on ESPN, if you guys haven't flipped through. It is the best athletes in the world on stage, mingling with the celebrities, mingling with Hollywood. They're giving these awards out for best moment, best team, best soccer guy, best baseball player, which went to Albert Pujols, by the way. Best overall athlete, everything, you name it, it went through it. And at the end of the day, when I realized I was watching this show, I'm like, man, we as people make a really big deal about ourselves. We make a really big deal about us. And then, of course, you know, every fall on MTV, the Video Music Awards come on. You guys know what I'm talking about? MTV hasn't shown a video of music in the last 15 years, for I can remember. The only thing I see on there is True Life, Made, The Hills, hello over there, and a bunch of other shows that have nothing to do with videos, have nothing to do with music. Why? Why even have a award show where you can give somebody a moon man, if you will, to celebrate what? To celebrate us. But I think as our culture has developed, and especially in America, we've decided that we are excellent. We are great. We are, to put it in a better terms, we are on the pinnacle of what it means to be alive, what it means to be something. I mean, look at your jobs. You guys work. You guys work to provide for your family. You guys work to provide for, you know, your home, your status, your situation. There's just such thing as a corporate ladder where you guys try to climb. And typical, you know, most cases, maybe not in Christian circles, but maybe some, there are those that try to climb over people to get to certain positions. Why? Because we want to be on top. We want to be supreme. We want to make a name for ourselves. I mean, Albert Pujols' restaurant was all about who? Albert. All about Albert. In our lives, in our culture, especially the American culture, it seems that we're grown up to say, go get yours. It's all about you. Go out and get yours. That's it. Make a name for yourself. I mean, how many times do I have to flip on the channel and look at the Jersey Shore? Why do I have to watch Sookie, Pauly D, and the rest of the guys on MTV trying to figure out what they're going to do next? Why? Because they want to make a name for themselves. And our culture is giving them that freedom. Push it out there. It's about being human. It's about being humanity. And it leads me to this question. If we are the pinnacle, if our culture says we're on top, if our culture says that what we don't need to do is really worry about where we came from, really worry about our origin, really worry about who's really ultimately in charge, but only care about what we're doing, where we're going, and how we're doing. I'm wondering, is our culture honestly thinking to themselves, especially as they look at Christians, is God enough? Is God enough? And that's the question I want you guys to think about today. In your own personal life, is God enough? We live in a world where it says, go get yours, take care of yourself, have a family. It's so funny because I've got neighbors that I've never met before. Ever. It's like I get home with the wife and my little girl, Olive, and we go in the house. I lock the door. I'm a freak about locks. My apologies. I lock the door. I watch television / do something else at the house. And that's my afternoon. I don't mingle with the neighbors, but sometimes I've got a really cool neighbor right next door. We have a lot of conversations, whether I want to or not. And it's really, really, you know, it's intriguing to me. I don't know much of the people around me. I feel like as a culture, especially in America, we do a great job of just tunneling in on what we're doing, where we're going. We're not really worried about anything else. We're not really worried about where we came from. We're not really worried about where we're going. We're just worried about who? Me. Just me. And what's important to me. Whether it be family, whether it be celebrity, whether it be status, whether it be your job, whether it be climbing some sort of, you know, ego mountain. That's where I find ourselves. That's where I find myself sometimes. We make such a big deal of us that we forget where we came from. We forget who we came from. And what's interesting, as we get into our passage here in a second, God has a lot to do with this planet, believe it or not. The creator God of the universe has a lot to do with this. Has a lot to do with you. Has a lot to do with the fact that you're actually being able to sit down on the ground. That you're able to rest. That you're able to breathe. That you're able to focus and look at me as I'm sweating right here and my toe on my left foot is so sore right now that I'm just blocking it out because of the ear pain I've got from this microphone. Dude, you said it had to hurt, so it had to hurt. But what I'm trying to get you guys to realize is that how sensitive are we to the things around us? How sensitive we are to the fact that you can touch your fingers like this right here. You can actually feel that. When you look around, what do you see? When you look around, what do we see? Do we see just this world that is loaded with worry, loaded with trouble, loaded with whatever? Or do we see a world that God has made, that God has put into our focus, into our view, where all we have to do is look around and see God? I think a lot of times we wake up, we get in the shower, we put on our clothes, we head off to work with or without breakfast. I'm a protein shake kind of guy. That's just me. We get to our job. We do our job. We go eat lunch because at that point we're starving. We take a break from work. We go home. And we spend the rest of our day. And guess what we do the next day? The very same thing. I think a lot of times, especially as people in our culture, we're locked in on where we want to go, how we want to do it, and when we want to do it. We don't stop to look around. We don't stop to see it. We don't stop to actually see it, the things that God has made. And a lot of times, we don't even look at ourselves. You guys understand how wonderfully made you are? Do we understand how wonderfully made you are? You spend the 30 seconds a day it would only take for you just to think, you know what? I can exhale carbon dioxide and breathe in oxygen. But our atmosphere is in such a way where I can breathe and everything's okay. Where I can move around on a stage, and if I step off the stage, I'm not just going to float, which would be awesome, by the way. You know what I'm saying? That'd be awesome. If I called that, that'd be even better, right? If I was just like, watch this, boop, 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 and just walked right out to you guys, that'd be insane. But anyway, so we're locked here. We're here. We're on the ground. We're not moving. We're here. And what's interesting is Paul, an author in the Bible, he wrote, you know, a good 2/3 of the New Testament. He has a lot to say about God. He has a lot to say about God to a church that doesn't really come from good, godly roots. Pagan societies like Rome, like Greece and stuff like that, they've had all these gods that they just made up. And 2,000 years ago, when Paul's writing this letter to these church in Rome, he's describing to them what can happen when you do not lock in, you do not focus, you do not consider God to be enough for you. Where you walk around your world and it's your world, you're in your world and everything around you is about you. And you begin to forsake, and you begin to think, you know what? God's not necessary. You begin to think, you know what? If I'm doing okay in my job, if I'm doing okay in my family, if bad things aren't really happening to me, is God really necessary? Is he enough? Do I really need him around? So Paul sits down and he writes a letter to a church in Rome that he's never met before, never gone there yet. He's longing to be there. He's like, guys, I want to be with you. I want to be where you are. I want to teach you. I want to love on you. I want to make much of God. I want to make less of what you've got going on. And I want to give you a warning of what could happen when you don't speak much of God, when you don't lock in and focus, when you honestly consider that God, he's just not enough for you. You got to have more. You got to add to it. It can be God plus a nice house, plus a nice car, plus a nice job. But just God himself is not sufficient for you. If you guys have your Bibles, let's turn to Romans chapter 1. And Paul's not afraid. Paul's not afraid. If you guys have heard anything about Paul, Paul's not a fearful man, because Paul used to persecute Christians. And what was interesting about Paul is that not only did he persecute Christians, he did it very, very religiously. I mean, he was all the time going around to different churches, different synagogues, pulling people out that claimed to follow Jesus, and he put them in jail. And if the charges were large enough, they would just stone them to death. Pretty cool job, huh? No? Nobody? Nobody's raising hands on that one? No? No, it wasn't. But see, Paul had an idea that the way things have always been, the way things have always been, are the way they always should be. And what happened was that these guys that had become this religious elite in his society had completely disconnected from the God of the universe and began to absorb a lot of laws they just kind of made up on their own. They kind of followed this system that was about rules and regulations, that was about balancing acts and all this other stuff that if you do this, things are good for you. If you don't do this, things are bad, and vice versa. So Paul sits down and he's writing a letter. But before that, he's persecuting these Christians on a regular basis, and Jesus just stops him in his tracks and blinds him. Stops him on the way to persecute Christians and blinds him. Raise your hand if you've ever been blind before. Raise your hand if you've ever looked into a light and couldn't see anything. Yes, that was like 25 right there. That was a good number. I've done it before. I've stared right in the sun before. Matter of fact, last night I was going for a ball in the right center gap, And as I was running, I lost the ball in the light. Completely lost the round softball coming at 100 miles an hour in my face in the light. That ain't good. You don't want to lose the round thing you're supposed to catch with the leather and not with your teeth in the lights. So I'm running and running and running and running and running. All of a sudden, all I see is light. And all I don't see is the ball. So I do my best to kind of get back and focus. I tuck in, I'm looking, and all of a sudden, I catch it before it hits me right in the mouth. The rest of the team was really excited about that. I was just relieved about that. You know what I'm saying? I was absolutely relieved about the fact that I didn't have to go to the orthodontist, go get some teeth put back in. Any of those kind of things that would typically happen to me had I not seen anything. If you can't see, you can't see. But Paul is completely blind. Paul is completely blind. And Jesus is saying, Paul, why are you persecuting me? Make a long story short, after this conversation with Jesus, Paul begins to understand that Jesus is God. He's the only way. The religious system that he had believed for his entire life, he had grown up, literally, he called himself a Jew of the Jews. I mean, he was a Pharisee. He was religious elite. He was top dog in his region. He realized, you know what? All this is nothing. All this is vapor. All this is just complete waste of time. I've got to pursue Christ. When I pursue Christ, I find God. So in Romans chapter 1, Paul's giving them a warning. He's saying in verse 18, he's saying, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. But what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world. In the things that have been made. So they were without excuse. That is, these people that have become wicked and godless. For although they knew God, they did not honor God as God or gave thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man. Y'all ready? And birds and animals and reptiles. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served the creator rather than the creature. I'm sorry, reverse that. Good grief. The creature rather than creator who is blessed forever. Amen. You think Paul's serious about this? Think Paul's serious about this? Think Paul understands that the guys, God is above everything else. You guys realize that when you look at the sun, you're looking at one star. Y'all realize he's a star, right? The sun is a star. The sun is a star in our little solar system made up of billions of stars in our galaxy, which is made up of a lot of other galaxies. Our universe is made up of a lot of other galaxies, billions and billions of other galaxies, and billions and billions of galaxies. Within each galaxy are billions and billions of stars. I was looking online this week, and I was trying to figure out, what's a good number? What's a good number of stars that we have? Because I got to go to, like I said, went to the Pink Palace, planetarium, rock back, in between naps, I noticed there's a lot of stars up there. And this is just in the Northern Hemisphere. There's a lot of things that we can't see when we look up that's there. Isn't that amazing? There's a lot of things that are out there that we don't see because we're just in the wrong spot. So I looked online, and a rough estimate, you guys bear with me, a rough estimate of the amount of stars in the universe is 70, y'all ready? Sextillion. Everybody's like, what? Sextillion. Y'all ready for this? That's 70, comma, 000, comma, 000, comma, 000, comma. Let's go back over here. 000, comma, 000, comma, 000, comma. One more time. 000. 21 zeros. 21. I feel like in my lifetime I might come close to eating 76 trillion McDonald's hamburgers. But maybe not. You guys understand how large that is? Like, I looked at a list of the largest numbers that man has created. The largest number that I found on the website that I was looking at, and I can't remember what it is at the time, was a number called non-gentilian. Non-gentilian. Take that back to work tomorrow. 10, y'all ready? 10 with 303 zeros added to it. There's nothing that big. Nothing weighs that much. There's no distance you can go non-gentilian miles away. It's just an insane number. When I think about God and I think about the fact that he created a universe in which there are 70 sextillion stars, and he selected one of those stars to be our sun, and he selected three planets away from that sun to be our place of residence, and within that place, which understand that the likelihood of life being in anywhere else in the universe other than this planet is less than 0.01%. We live on a planet that is unlike anything else in the universe. We're sitting on chairs and we're standing here, like I mentioned before, because 16 pounds per square inch of gravity is pushing us to the surface. Any more, we're crushed. Any less, and I'm walking off this stage. I'm not even on the stage. It gets to the point where we can't even be able to sustain breath because we get too high in our atmosphere, which, like I said, our atmosphere is in such a way where all the poisonous stuff stays up there. And all the, everybody breathe in deep, stays down here. We live in a world where the axis of our globe is just so perfect to where our seasons happen correctly. Rotation is just so. Distance from the sun is just so. Distance from the moon is just so. Blow up the moon, steal the moon, like in Despicable Me. You know what I'm talking about? We're flooded. Sorry. It's water world. You better get your canoes and boats out, boys and girls, because we're just in the right place at the right time. All this stuff is working perfectly. And do we really even think about that? We really take time to, you know, just say, wow. God, what is your hands? Look what your hands have made. Look what you've done. God, you are enough. God, if I just come to you, everything is fine. I mean, while you sit there, consider, is God really, based on what he's made, based on how incredibly awesome he has to be, in order for anything to be, is God your refuge? Is God your strength? Is God your place of comfort? The one that spoke everything into existence and holds all things together. He keeps this thing going, your body going. You know what's hilarious about our bodies? I say hilarious because I like that word. What's hilarious about our bodies is that there are this stuff called DNA. Y'all familiar with DNA? One time? Eight people? Grief. DNA is information. Information within each cell. There's millions and millions and millions of cells within your body, and there's 6 feet of code / information within each cell. The distance of information in your bodies, information within your bodies, if we were to stretch them all out, stretch it all out, we could lap the sun 66 times. Here to the sun and back and back and back and back 66 times. That's the amount of code and information that's being processed, proteins being built, all this stuff going on within your body. Do you guys know that? Do you guys really sit on that and just think, you know what? That's ridiculous. You guys are special. And what's crazy is that everybody's DNA code is different. It's not the same. We're unique. We're the work of a creator, a designer, a master organizer. Geppetto has absolutely nothing on God. I mean, you guys, seriously, think about how often you think about what God has done. And what would be different in your family? What would be different at your workplace? What would be different in our culture? Especially those that claim to know God, they claim to follow God, that are worshipers of God. What if we made more of God and less of us? What are some things that could be different? What could you do differently? Where would you go? Who would you think about? Where would you spend your time? Where would you spend your money? Those are the things that you ponder when you stop and think about what he's made. When you pause and you consider. But guys, what happens is, in our culture, is that when we make less of God and more of us, you have cultures that Paul was writing to saying, guys, check it. You cannot discount God. You cannot make less of God. You've got to make more of God. Like when I was at Albert's restaurant, the restaurant wasn't about me. I couldn't walk in there and start shaking everybody's hands and, Eddie Davis, how y'all doing? Eddie Davis, how y'all doing? How y'all doing, Eddie Davis? I play slow pitch softball. How y'all doing? I won a world championship in slow pitch softball. I won a state title. Largest invitational in the country. We won that. I was actually MVP of that. So just want to say. I was all state these past 2 weekends in my softball tournament. How y'all doing? You don't walk in Albert Pujols' restaurant and think you're better than Albert. The ball's coming in, guys, at 8 miles an hour. It's this. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. Albert's hitting something at 95. Falling off the table, you know what I'm talking about. So what do? How do we absorb this? How do we take this? We take it just by making a slight adjustment in how you see the world. I mean, the people that Paul was writing to were part of a culture. They're coming out of a culture that had nothing to do with their creator and everything to do with the creatures. They were throwing themselves at each other. They weren't aligning their hearts with God. They were getting caught up in the world and just in the sin and just in the godlessness going around them. They were discounting the fact that God has an eternal law within our hearts that we just abide by naturally. And these people were throwing this away, saying, you know what? I don't want to be a creature anymore. I want to be creator. God's like, that's not reserved for you. I can be the only one. I've got to be the only one. So in your hearts, think, dig deep, cut through it, figure this out. Is God the only one? Is God enough? Is God in your heart to the point where you can look at a sunrise and think, oh my goodness, that's not me. When you guys go to the beach in Florida and you look out and you discount all the oil, you don't worry about the smell. When you sit there and you look out, you cast out, and you understand, goodness gracious, I couldn't have done this if I tried. I'm not even close to this. You guys, what would be different about you? What would be different about our culture? Do you think it's time for the believers, the ones that follow Jesus, the one who is God, and prove that by rising from the dead? Do you think it's about time for us to make more of God and less of us? Really seek him out and find out, where are we going, God? Because all I have to have is you. You're sufficient. You're enough. You're all I need. But there's nothing more I can say about this. This is where I have to give it to you. I've got to give it to you. And then I've got to join you in this idea that guys, if we speak more of God, God is there. If we speak more of God, recognition could pour out to our culture. Recognition could pour out to our families. Recognition could pour out to that neighbor that you've yet to speak to just because you're tired. Can you imagine what it would be like? It'd be pretty awesome. It'd be pretty incredible. The world would be benefited by what's going on, not only in this room, but to Christians across the globe. I mean, how much work is being done already? But how much more could be done? Think about that. Think about that. Let's pray together. Father, sometimes it's just about pausing. Sometimes it's just about wiping our eyes and understanding that you're God. Understanding that you hold all this together. You created us specifically to know you. You created us specifically to speak loudly of you. That we're so small compared to you. And yet it seems in our hearts that we're huge and you're small. Father, begin the process of reversing that. Begin the process of allowing us to return to you and expect only you. Return to you and say, you know what, God? All I need is you. You're more than enough. You're more than enough. And Father, allow us to rest in that. Allow us just to rest knowing that you've got us. If you can create 70 sextillion stars, you can handle my problems. And the problems that I think I have. Father, break into our hearts. Begin to change us so that we can change those around us. This is all for the glory of your name.